Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, J. Michael Michael here, and welcome to 2019. If you're like me and you love talk radio, but you can't find anything worth listening to on the AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the baddest in LA and is a .com, so we have it all from sports to music to self-help to just about anything, including talk. Right now, we have the new writer's favorite show, The Writer's Block. So, sit back, pour some more wine, grab another box of chocolates, and enjoy because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
I am quite sure that everybody on the radio knows what song that is.
You can see the blood roll through the eye, right?
Well, I knew I wasn't going to get Brill on this one, but I just had to do this because this book is the closest I have read in years and years and years to the original Ian Fleming James Bond. And if anybody has gotten close to James Bondism, it is our next guest. So I congratulate him right now. But hey, Bobby.
Yes.
You got a package for me today.
I did.
I know, and I know what's in it.
Hey, Bobby, I got like one too,
and Bro got one too, and actually, so did our producer. So our engineer.
You know what, Jim?
What?
I want another copy. You know why? Somebody wrote in mine.
I know. Is that the one that says "fu"?
Yeah, there's a couple. It's just two words, you know. And
okay. So. Well, that's fine. I did write in yours, Bob.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
you're welcome. I hope you enjoy it.
I will. I will read it.
I think this one's going to grab legs like Jonah Blue did.
Oh, good. Well, you know, I just finished The Last Lancer, and I finished another script, and now I got some time that I can sit and read. So
well,
I'm gonna try.
You know, for those out there in radio land that have no idea what I'm talking about, my new book just hit sales 2 weeks ago, Monday, and the ebook went live on February 1st, and the book's title is Jefferson's Chance. So if you get a chance, an opportunity, go to Amazon and check it out. It's a pretty good story.
And I have to tell you, there's a badge of a Texas Ranger on the front.
There is, and an artificial leg.
Yes, I noticed that.
It's a really gripping cover.
It's
a very compelling cover.
Yeah, they messed it up, though, because they put the author's picture on the
back. I know. You know, and it just drips poo-poo. we are welcoming back tonight on the Writer's Block a returning guest, one who has written a previous spy novel, and he has definitely written number two, which is a lot more into the action part than the first novel was. The name of the book is Into the Shadows. It's The Assassins. What is it? The Assassins? Assassination Corps. And I'm just going to bring him in. This guy is an ex-spook. He's done everything. He's a tactical and strategic intelligence officer. Writing compelling novels that he teaches intelligence. The guy is just awesome. Would you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Michael Brady.
Jim, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure having you back, Mike. It's just we had talked.
Speaking of your book, it's wonderful. I downloaded it last night. I tell you what, any book with a guy named Jefferson Chance, and then another character named Stinky in the first chapter, he's got me.
Oh, yeah, the bad guy, Stinky. Stinky and Sandy.
Thank you. I loved it. I gotta figure out how to put a Stinky in one of my books down the road. I don't know how I'm gonna do it, but I gotta figure it out.
Well, actually, it's Stinky and Sandy. They're bad guys. Jefferson's name is Jefferson Greeley.
Yeah, Jefferson. Oh, yeah, right. I'm sorry. Yeah, Jefferson Greeley. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Yep. But when I read that thing on Stinky, and I read the first chapter only last night. I was just too tired to keep
reading. Oh, cool.
Reading, but I was like, this is going to be fun. This is going to be, you know.
It's actually a pretty good story. Oh, so you've gotten to the point where he's already become a Texas Ranger then? Or no?
It's through the first chapter.
Oh, okay.
I think what I read. Yeah, no, he has not become a Ranger yet. I don't think so. The last thing I remember, Jefferson was in the bar.
Yeah. Yeah, he's talking to Thomas Griffith about making him a leg.
That's right. That's right, making him a leg.
Yep.
What a great story. I can't wait to finish it, man.
Yeah, because Jim found out he has a leg up.
I do. I actually have two. Hey, let's talk.
Well, in the beginning when he said this book was going to have legs like Joshua Blue, I thought.
No, Jonah Blue. Jonah. Oh, my God,
cover?
Bobby. Jonah Blue.
I know. I liked how he said that. That was good.
It's going to get legs like Jonah Blue did, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Into the Shadows because the Assassination Corps, because it's quite a compelling story. Most of it takes place in China. It's our returning hero, Michael Brennan, and this time he's hooked up with an MI6 guy named John.
John Dearlove.
John Dearlove.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to keep that tradition going, where I have the main protagonist, Michael Brennan. But if you recall from the first book last year, he worked with an agent from Mossad,
right,
which is the Israeli intelligence. And so this time I was like, you know what, we're gonna change things up again, and we're gonna go with an SIS officer. So I decided to go with John Dearlove. I thought it made sense too, based on the story, the plot, you know, taking place mostly in China. The CIA does not have a long historical track record of conducting espionage in China. But the Brits have and still do. And so I thought it made more sense for him to team up with somebody from UK. So,
you know, this actually was it was 180 degrees off from Ian Fleming, because of course his protagonist was James Bond and his buddy was Felix Leiter. Now we have
Felix Leiter, yes sir.
Yeah, and now we have Michael Brennan, who's the US guy, and then we have his buddy John, that's the sidekick, that is MI6. So,
yep, absolutely. So I thought it went well. I thought the characters, there was a little bit of tension there, if you recall from the book,
yes,
at the beginning, and a little bit of distrust, but they learned to work together and eventually became fairly close. So.
Yes, they did.
And they throw it back and forth at each other a couple of times.
Oh,
too,
yes, they do.
They did. Well, there was one time, if you remember, when Michael was you know, there was somebody going after Michael without ruining the story, and so he thought, you know, John may have been aware of it, or if it was one of John's assets that John had recruited many years ago, and so that was definitely a tense moment for a while. So,
one of the questions that I wanted to ask you in reading through the book, they spent some time up in northwest China, up on the Silk Trail, in an area called Urumqi, and I've been there. Love that. It's my favorite part of China, actually. And I was kind of curious. Had you been there before?
I have not, no. Okay. No, everything that I got was just through my own research, but I have not been there myself. No.
Well, if you ever go, they have the best food in China.
It's a beautiful place.
Oh, it is. It's the Muslim area in Zhejiang province, yep, and all the food is so totally different than the rest of China because it's spicy. And they have a lot of peppers and different spices up there. And it's just like every time I think about it, and it's really a great place. It's where the Uyghur people are. And it's really heavily populated.
Uyghurs,
it's a Muslim area. And I was kind of curious if you had thought about getting into the Muslim stuff with this book, since some of it was based up in that area.
Yeah, I thought about doing that. But, the story just kind of took me in a little bit of a different direction, you know. I had planned to talk a little bit more about that, just to kind of give the reader a little bit more background. Actually, some people who read the book also mentioned the same thing. You know, I wish you could have gotten into a little bit more backstory in some of these regions. But I was just the story just kind of led me, the characters led me, and I probably should have done something in the background. I'm actually working on I'm almost done with my third book, and I'm actually have already started a fourth one, and the fourth one is also going to be a China book. And so I think this time what I'm going to try to do a little bit differently is to give a lot more backstory and a little bit more of the history of the people in the regions where the protagonists are operating. So, but it was a good point on your part. You know, it's something I got to work on. So,
it's a cool thing too, especially with China, because you do have so many different autonomous regions. You know, because China takes
so much. Exactly right. I mean, it's exactly right. It's very autonomous, a lot of different districts. And so, you know, it was one of the first things I heard from a I wouldn't call him a friend, but a colleague. And so he was like, yeah, you know, I wish you would have talked a little bit more about some of these places. I'm like, well, gosh, I mean, I got a story to write. You know? so, this is not the first time I've heard that. So, but I appreciate it. So thanks. And any feedback is good feedback. So.
Oh, absolutely. You know, any word is a good word.
That's exactly right.
There
you got
go.
It, my man.
I like
you,
the cover with the drone.
Yeah. We just had some fun. I mean, I sent a couple ideas off to the publisher, and so they came back and they liked I don't know what it was, like the second or third one that I proposed, and just kept it kind of simple. And so that's kind of what we wanted to do is just we wanted a simple cover, and but I wanted something to do with drones because, you know, if you recall from the first book and even in the second book, I mean, I'm a big proponent of technology. I just love technology, and it's really changed the way we conduct espionage. It's changed the way we do covert operations. And so I just felt like even though there weren't a lot of the larger drones like the MQ-1 Reaper or something like that, in the book, you know, drones are still a big part of what my characters are using, you know, and so we went ahead with it, we liked it, and we just slapped it on there and went fine with it. So,
I liked it towards the end of the book when they were packing the truck or their SUV to go up to the up towards the border. They threw a bunch of little drones in there.
Yeah, they threw the micro drones.
Yeah,
and those are actually, you know, those are actually being used right now in places like Afghanistan. Matter of fact, we've been using those kind of drones since about 06, 07 when the special operations community started testing them out. So they're being used. They're being more widely deployed across even the military forces. And so it's definitely not, you know, fantasy or fiction anymore. Those those types of capabilities exist, and they're being used by people overseas. So.
Well, Bobby Jane, don't let the boys knock you out of the conversation.
Well, no, I'm glad you're talking about the drones, and I wasn't sure looking at the cover, because I'm not technical, if that was a drone or some type of an airplane I wasn't familiar with, and I thought the use of the drones was very interesting, and like a John Clancy novel who always would throw in technical stuff that I had no idea was actually out there. I thought, you know, that you have one that flies into the house and it goes all around the upper level to make sure that there isn't anybody else in the house, you know. I thought, drones are doing that? And then you had the one that attacked the car that was chasing, you know, our key people, and somehow they let a drone out and it went to the – and I thought that was fascinating.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, what I've tried to do is in my books, and I've only got two out right now. I'll have some more out here in the next couple of years. But what I've been trying to do is just introduce readers not only to a compelling story, one that's interesting, but one that shows how technology is just changing the way we do business. You know, I mean, 30, 40, 50 years ago, spies basically. They did the good old-fashioned, you know, human intelligence collection. I mean, it was face-to-face. It was breaking into location or into denied areas. Nowadays, I mean, there is still some of that. But, you know, what we're doing mostly, either through the cyber world or through drone collection, you know, we're putting these capabilities out there to protect our assets, our intelligence officers and our assets. And so I don't see a lot of authors doing that in my genre. I mean, there's certainly a lot of writers in the genre. But a lot of what I'm seeing in the genre are just, you know, like the MQ-1 Reaper drones, the MQ-9s, you know, the drone strikes that we're familiar with, you know, watching on CNN. But what's being used by some of our special operators and some of our assets on the ground in denied areas are these small, tiny drones. And when you think about it, it makes sense, you know, because of the technology is here, you know. And what I'm trying to do with these books is show that the old trade craft, the old school of doing espionage is different. you know, even how you engage an asset if you get into a firefight. You know, I tried to put a little bit more gunplay in this one, if you noticed.
Yes, I did.
In the first book. But what I tried to do was show that it may not necessarily be, you know, a gun per se. It may be, you know, something very small like a micro drone, because we know these micro drones exist. I mean, just look at the PD-100, which just came out actually in the news a couple days ago, and it was a picture of a soldier holding it, and it was flying, and so that's what I'm trying to do. Is I'm trying to introduce the reader to today's technology. You know, nothing that's too outlandish, but something that is clearly being used. So. I'm glad you liked it, Bobby.
That was fascinating.
One of the things that I'm glad you were on this level of talking about this, because that's where I kind of wanted to go next was, you know, in the 1930s we had Dick Tracy with a wrist television.
And the two-way wrist radio.
Yeah, and everybody thought then, you know, oh, yeah, right, you know, that'll never happen, or maybe some 100 years in the future. I guess my question deals with how far are we now, and what is the next generation of technology that we may think now is like, oh God, not for a long time, but we're really on the cusp, or maybe even already come there with the technology that may be used and that may be even being used already?
Oh, it's got to be artificial intelligence, Jim. It's artificial intelligence. I mean, the intelligence community has been using artificial intelligence to do basic analytical research. But drones now, they're putting in AI technology into drones where if certain images come across the drone system, they can program that drone to engage the target right away. And so, I can't say for sure, that they're using AI offensive drone technology in places like Somalia, Afghanistan, and a few other places. But I think that is the technology that is probably going to be commonplace in about 5, 6, 7 years in both the military and in the intelligence community. We're seeing it already now. I know people who are in the intel business. A friend of mine just called me this past weekend. He finished up a tour in Africa, and technology using artificial intelligence is being implemented, tested, and used in some places. So I think that's where we're going to go. I think it's AI.
And in what form for the average person who doesn't understand what that is?
It's just software, you know, AI, the ability to, you know, it's written code. And so, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert on AI, but basically you're writing algorithms, you're writing code. And so, for example, if you're an intel analyst at the CIA and, you know, the computer is getting significant indicators, which somebody has already probed in. If you have, you know, one indicator, then two indicators, and three indicators, then this event is likely to happen. That's what AI is going to do. AI on a drone is going to have images where, for example, you could see an AK-47. Let's just keep it very simple and basic to that level. And so if you've programmed that drone to engage a target that is carrying an AK-47, you can do that. I mean, we know that capability exists right now. And so hopefully that helps you know, your audience in understanding that. It's just simple programming, but it's done by people. But you're putting in parameters in there where you're giving machines the ability to engage targets on their own. And it's just all based on parameters and software and how you write those algorithms.
So, for instance, if you program, in your scenario, for the drone to find, when it recognizes someone with an AK-47 in a certain area that it's flying in, it would, let's say, automatically recognize that, target it, fire off something, and destroy that target. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, we are. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of ethical issues with that. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I'm pretty sure that example I just gave you is not being utilized. But for example, another example would be, you know, we have a lot of low Earth orbit satellites, and you and your audience know that we have satellites, and they take pictures of stuff. You know, they take pictures in denied areas, and so what another thing you can do is you can program the system where if you see, you know, let's just say a missile, whether it's a North Korean missile, a Chinese medium-range ballistic missile, or an Iranian missile, what you can do is you can program in there, and you can say, okay, if the dimensions are, you know, X, Y, and Z, if it's this long, this, you know, this many bolts on the bottom, this many bolts on the top, what AI will allow people to, or what the machines to do, is to identify that target before even a human being can. So it speeds up the processing, and so you can either use that information for analysis or engagement.
Actually makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. No, it's fascinating.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
I'm sitting here thinking, wow.
I mean, it isn't often we get to sit here and talk to.
I mean, it's a scary business. I mean, you know, I was talking to a friend. I would say, I guess a good friend of mine the other day, and so we were talking. And he's like, look, he goes, have you thought about doing a book about AI? And I'm like, yeah, I actually have, but I got to get through the next couple. And so he's like, yeah, it'd be kind of neat if you could really introduce people to AI and how it might look and how it might work, but more importantly, how a spy, you know, or an intel officer might use that. And so it's really interesting that you bring this up, because it's on my list of things to start doing some research in and getting some more information on. So
right.
Maybe we'll have an AI Michael Brennan soon.
Well, you know, it's not often what we get to sit and talk to a real live spook. So that's kind of cool. You know,
that's crazy.
I, having known a few in my day, it's there. Guys are fascinating people. Fascinating people. Let me ask you, Michael.
There's some really good men and women out there.
Absolutely. Oh my God, hardworking, right, life on the line people. They're great.
Yep.
When you first finished your first book, The Fever, or Into the Shadows, The Fever. How soon after did you finish that book did you start writing the second, or did you start writing the second while you were still writing the first?
No, I started basically right away. I mean, once I got the initial manuscript into the publisher, you know, they do their two or three edits, you know, they send it off to their editors. And so I started writing Assassination Corps. And so what would happen is, you know, I mean, I don't remember exactly when, maybe 5-6 weeks. After, you know, I sent the first draft, you know, the initial editor came in and just kind of highlighted some things. Hey, you know, do this, do that, or, you know, we need you to look at this, this and that. So then I would put my second book on hold. I'd spend, you know, a week or 2 weeks going through all the edits, you know, trying to revise things, you know, trying to catch some more errors that I probably had. And then it went back again. And we did that, I think it was three times again. I can't remember. It might have been two this time. But I was writing, as soon as the book finished. And, so, I mean, I just have a lot of stories in my head. You know,
uh-huh.
I mean, I've got, like I was saying, I'm at about 70,000 words right now in book three, and I'm wrapping that up, but I've been really motivated, inspired by another story that I've started. And, I'm already at like 25,000 words into that, which somebody told me the other day it's dangerous to do that, because, you know, you're going to have two different things. You know, you might have two different points of view that are going to overlap a little bit. And I said, no, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And so, but part of the reason why I'm doing that too is that, because of some things going on in my personal life, I've asked, my publisher if we could extend the due date. So the pub date for book three was originally scheduled for this November. And so I emailed them and I said, look, you know, if we push this out to June of 20, and so they said yes. And so with a little bit of extra padding, I was like, you know what, I've got this idea that I just have to at least start. And so, you know, I'm hoping to finish the third one here in the next month or so, and mm-hmm. and just start doing my own editing. But mm-hmm. yeah, I try to write all the time. I mean, it's, you know, one of the things I've learned, and you know this, you know, Jim, you're an author. I mean, all of y'all are authors, and I mean, it's a craft. I mean, it's a discipline. And I found that when I take more than 2 or 3 days off, or I used to, it was a little bit harder to start, you know. But if you write every day, even if it's only 300-500 words, you know, you just get better at it, you know.
Right.
It's almost like muscle memory. You
sure.
know?
Every time you start putting words to the page, you get better at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I feel like I still got room to grow, but a lot. I mean, I don't think any author ever really hits a perfect book. And so, you know, you made a great point at the beginning when we were talking. It's just like, this is a lot more adventure. Well, I just wanted to be adventurous. You know,
right.
I wanted to see what the reaction would be by my readers, you know. And so, you know, some people like the first book more, which I was a little surprised. They were like, no, we really liked the first one, even though there was a little bit of that professorial that came out at me, but we really liked that one. And then I had others who said, man, this is great. You know, this is really, it really was a fast page turner, and I liked it. And so, but as you all know, you can't please everybody.
Nope.
You know, and you just got to go in the direction that your characters take you. And so what I've tried to do consciously throughout book three, which hopefully I'll be wrapping up here, like I said, in about a month or so, is to try to find a little bit more balance, you know, between the consistent action and really work a little bit more on my character development. You know, I think that's probably one of the weaknesses I have, is I haven't learned how to develop all of my main characters,
mm-hmm.
To give more backstory. And so that's one of the things I'm trying to work on now. Well, when you do things like that, as you know, you're going to slow down. The story is going to slow down a little bit more. But I'm trying to put, you know, like Michael Brennan in situations where there's a lot more reflective thought, you know, and, you know, he may be looking at something from his past. And so you spend some time. And so that's one of the things I've really been trying to work on. So hopefully that'll come out in the next couple of books, is just more refinement of the actual character. And some of the emotions that go through him. So,
well, you know, this.
Michael,
is, go ahead, Bob.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Bob.
No, it was me.
Oh, go ahead, Jim.
What I was going to say is, you know, is this? This is the kind of stuff, because the show is geared towards newer writers. This is the kind of stuff that new writers like to hear, because it gives them a direction and it gives them something to work on. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you all have written more books than I have. I mean, you guys know this stuff better than I do. And I mean, it's tough to get it right, you know? And so I'm really, you know, I mean, I've made a commitment to really trying to become the best writer I can be. I mean, I think the first one, it was more like, can I do it? You know, there was a story in me and I certainly wanted to tell it, but it was really like, man, can I really write 76,000 words and make it, you know, somewhat enjoyable for an audience? And is there a market for this? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm getting to know other writers, some of the bigger authors actually. And so some of the tips I'm getting from these authors are, you know, just look, you know, the things I've been told is like, you're a really good writer, your flow is really good, you know, but I think some of the things you can work on is your character development.
Right.
And I've heard that now more than once. And so if you have somebody in your audience that is really aspiring to either publish their first book or to try and improve, which is my focus right now, it's really developing your character more, and really getting inside their thoughts. I mean, you want to put the reader in the character's thoughts, and there's a technique to that,
right.
And there's an art form to that, and I'm learning that, you know. And so I think that'd be what I would suggest to anybody who's either looking to get published or is looking to write further. So.
Right. Now, are all of your novels going to be Into the Shadows with the subtitle?
No, actually, it's a good question. The third one that'll be coming out now in June of 2020 instead of this year,
right,
is called Into the Shadows, Fire by Six. But, you know, I probably, when I finish up the manuscript, I've been thinking about just getting rid of the Into the Shadows and just calling it Fire by Six.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth one, you know, I'm going to, you know, I've got an idea of what I'm going to call it, but it won't have Into the Shadows. I mean, I think Into the Shadows, you know, that the preface and then something else is probably going to be going away. It's just not necessary. I mean, when I first started this, I was like, this would be kind of cool if I created a brand. I mean, it was really the intent for me as a writer was to create a brand,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so for me, I was like, well, Into the Shadows, I mean, it kind of sounds cool. I mean, I don't know what y'all think, but, you know, it sounds neat. And it's like, okay, you know, if anybody hears that, it's like, okay, I want them to think like, oh, that's going to be a spy novel. You know, that's going to be something
right,
to do with espionage. But I found that, you know, it's probably better just to start using just single titles and get rid of the ITS. So, but we'll see.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what the publishers say and how things go. Yeah, so.
What was the basis for the change of thought?
You talk about for the Into the Shadows?
Right.
From
dropping it to going to the single title. I know currently the thinking in movies and books and everything is like one word, two word for titles. And
yeah.
I was kind of curious. I mean, I personally like the branding idea. So I was just kind of curious what would really be the thought behind it. Was it a suggestion of the publisher or was it on your own?
No, it's just something on my own. I mean, the publisher has no idea that I'm even, you know, thinking about it. I mean, it may stick, you know, I don't know. It just
unless
seems
they're
to
listening
me
to
like
that.
When you look like when you look at, you know, like in my genre, okay, you look at the great writers and you know, guys like Clancy and Frederick Forsyth and Graham Greene and John le Carré, you look at them, they don't have that type of branding. You know, they'll have the same protagonist. But for me, it seems like trying to get readers, you know, when you do a book signing, you go out and do a talk, or, you know, I was at the International Spy Museum back in December. I was on their show, and, you know, just saying Into the Shadows, Assassination Corps, Into the Shadows, The Fever, seems a little lengthy. I don't know what you all think. I I'd be happy to take any suggestions you all have.
I actually like
just
the titles.
A thought right now, Jim.
I like the titles.
I do too. I write a series called Lancer Hero of the West, and then there's a subtitle on each one. And that was my idea, was branding. And that's why I was kind of curious too.
Yeah.
Okay, no, that's great. I got three really smart people telling me to keep it.
Well,
you know about that.
That is a huge assumption on your part.
You know, when you're looking at a bookshelf in the library or Barnes & Noble or somewhere, and, you know, you see them all lined up and then one's facing forward, and it's like, oh.
Yeah. Ooh, well, you know they... that's a good point. I mean, that's a really good point, Bobby. I mean, I saw that. I did one of the book signings I did last September when the book came out. I went up to Georgia in Savannah. And so they had one title left from last year's book. And so then they had, you know, my book's out, but then they had another one. And it looked good. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, it's interesting, you know, that you make a good point there. Visually, it's appealing. You know, you have Into the Shadows and then a sub, you know, and then two or three books lined up. So, you know, I may stay with that. It's just something that I was thinking about. But sounds to me like I might have to just keep it.
Well, I'll tell you, Michael, we had an author on here last April, John Sanford. And he is, you obviously know who he is. And he's every book he writes that has a particular character, Lucas Davenport, is a prey novel. It's Silent Prey, Winter Prey, you know, and he's written like 37 of them. So you're on the right track.
Yeah,
you're on the right track.
You're convincing me, guys. You're changing my mind.
I'm telling you, stick with us, pal. We'll fix you.
I have a quick question, and actually, all three of you could answer this one. How does it feel when you kill off a character? Is that hard, easy? Depends on the character. Tell me about that process.
Oh wow. It's the fist strikes to my face from people who like my characters.
You know, two books ago in the Lancer series, I killed off a young boy who had become he was only in that book, and one of my definite followers sent me an email and said, "I love this book. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, another one you've written is really well, but I really, really didn't." I was disappointed to hear that this young man had been killed. And that was the only feedback I got, but it was feedback.
Right.
You know, and so it's, you know, when you're writing about these types of things, whether it's the West or you're writing about spies or warfare or something, somebody's got to die. And, you know, I think it can be tough when you kill somebody off, but I think you have to take the tough road.
Right.
You know?
I think so, too. I honestly believe that as you're writing, characters come up and they serve their purpose eventually, whether it's one book, two books, three books, four books, but eventually now they really have no bearing to whatever the story is going, and I just think the best way to do it is just kill them off.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what do you think?
It also creates conflict.
It does create conflict.
We had a lot of, and some of it's, you know, I guess assassinations or, you know, we're taking out the, you know, we're just shooting them in the forehead or whatever. There's not a lot of emotion. Uh-huh. We didn't get attached. But still, you know, you killed off a fair number of people in this book.
Yes, yeah, and most of them had Chinese or Korean names.
Yeah, body count.
Yeah, that's right. There were at least, a couple of handfuls. But no, I mean, I have a hard time sometimes killing off a character, but you know, I'm gonna preface that by saying the following. You probably don't remember, but last year when The Fever came out, there was a main protagonist. You know, remember that Mossad agent we were talking about earlier,
right? Right.
Whose name was Elif Turan. Well, when I wrote the book, what I wrote in there was that Michael was told by a guy named Aaron in Mossad that she had died. And I did that purposely because I wanted the flexibility to bring her back, and because I didn't want to kill her off, but I wanted to see what kind of reaction there was. And I'm telling you right now, there were at least 10 people who contacted me, but most people don't even know. And they contacted me and they said, "Man, you know, nice story, you know, really enjoyed it, but why the hell did you kill Elif Turan?"
Yeah.
And then I would respond by saying, "Well, read that passage again, because I was what I said was, is that Mossad reported that she died. And so I'll do a little spoiler. She's coming back because I didn't want to keep her dead. But to answer your question, Bobby, I mean, I think you have to kill characters, kind of like what Jim said. It's just part of the story. I mean, you get an emotional attachment to them. But I think as I'm trying to improve my craft and trying to bring more emotion into storytelling, I think you almost have to have it. I think you have to have somebody that the reader loves, either in that book or in a series after a, you know, maybe one or two books in the series that dies. And I think because it's an emotional reaction, and I think that's what you want from your reader. You certainly don't want to turn them off, but I think it's going to be a little bit easier for me to kill my characters because I'm looking for that emotional reaction, and I feel like I'm building a universe of characters and stories, and I've still got 20 other stories to tell. So,
I actually killed off a character that was in four books. His name was Jolly Goodman, and he was just was a terrific character.
Mm-hmm. And we still won't forgive you for it.
I know, and the guy was he was an old miner, old fat, foul mouth, drank too much, but a very lovable guy. It's the kind of guy that required a rock to get on his horse.
But he deserved to die.
No, he did not. but his usefulness to the series was played out. So everything I wanted Jolly to do or provide for the storyline was already done.
And it wasn't like you could send him off on Social Security and
do
a nursing home.
Exactly. So you have to, I mean, you know, this it's kind of cold, but I think it gives the protagonist more motivation for the rest of the story.
That's a great point. It does. So that's exactly right. It gives more. That's exactly right. Good
We are going to take a couple minutes here, Michael, and we're going to do some ads, and we'll be back with you in just a second. So don't go away, please.
And sounds awesome.
Bobby Jean, I'm sure that you have your ad sitting right in front of you because you were going to have to read it.
It's really time to write a new one, but here we go.
I believe you're right.
It's so
here you go.
Out there.
Go for
it. It's 32 here in Albuquerque. We have had the fireplace on all day today. This is the time of year we reach for a warm, cozy blanket, a blanket that gets better with time. And Out West is your source for the Cadillac of blankets, the Denali Collection. Softer and warmer than fleece, these unique blankets are made from an innovative fabric called microplush, and Denali has patterns and designs for any home decor style. You provide the fire, the book, and your favorite hot beverage, and Out West provides the blanket. Come on over to outwestshop.com to find the perfect cozy throw for your long winter nap. Use coupon code BLANKET and save $10 off your order of $75 or more. Call toll-free 1-877-734-0978. It's always a great day out west.
There you go. And imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for a one- or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better. Well, check out their website at alldogsrule.com. Give them a call at 805-524-1100. And we all know whose vacation was better, the dog's. So call them at 805-524-1100. 1100, give Russ and Karen a call, and they would love to have your dog with them, and your dog will love to be there. Okay, one more and we're out of here. When Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, your brand, it's your future. So contact Mickey Mickelson at www.creativeedgepublicity.com and see what Mickey can do for you. He's a hell of a publicist. He is my publicist. And he could be yours. Okay, it is 7:38. We are back in the studio. We have Bobby Jean Bell, and we have Michael Brady on the phone with us. And, of course, Bob is sitting here looking extremely bored. I don't know why.
No, I'm not. I'm just reading an email.
No, No.
Okay.
Never.
All right,
I was
Bobby.
I was waiting for you to finish.
Okay.
You
know, well, Bobby, why don't you take the honors and ask Michael the question?
So, Michael, when you're working on your book, do you ever experience writer's block? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I guess a little bit. I mean, I think every writer experiences a little bit. You know, I think what happens is that, you know, you want to say something, but, you know, when you start, you know, writing a sentence on the computer, you say to yourself, oh, this sucks. You know, this isn't working. And so I found actually myself doing that the other day, but I wouldn't call it writer's block. I think it's just really, I think we'll, at least for me, I'll sit there sometimes and I'll say, okay, I know what I want to say, but how the hell am I going to say it? You know, what do I need to do? You know, and so I'll just take a break for a few minutes, or I'll go watch the news for a few minutes, or I'll read something, or, you know, I'll go for a run or something like that, and I'll come back. But as far as like writer's block, I guess how you define it, you know, do you go days and days and days without writing? And I have not experienced that, but I certainly have experienced frustration when I know what I want to, I see the scene in my head, but for whatever reason, I can't get the words down, you know, for that hour or two. And so, yeah, I think I've experienced it, and that's how I deal with it. I just walk away, get the heck away from the desk, and just come back after some time. So
there you go. Okay. Do you ever, when ideas pop into your head or scenes that you just, I mean, you don't want to lose, do you ever write them out and file them away so you can plug them in someplace else later on?
No, actually I don't. No, I mean, I typically, you know, I have the story from front to end almost. I mean, the characters will take me in certain directions, but I have a really good idea, at least some of the major incidents and how the plot's going to unfold. But, you know, no, I mean, I think often, because of my schedule, I'm traveling quite a bit, and my girlfriend and I live down here in Jacksonville, Florida. And so I'm here 5 days a week, but I'm up in Charleston as a professor. And so I spend a good amount of time mostly in the car driving back and forth or on the train. And obviously if I'm in the car, I will just keep thinking about what I'm going to write next. Mm-hmm. I'll just keep playing it out, okay? You know, I know this is going to happen. I know for the next five pages I'm going to do this, for the next five pages I'm going to do that. And I've noticed that, like, my writing style has changed a lot since even the second book came out, because I'm getting into a lot more detail. But I really think about it, but I do not write it down and file it away like you had mentioned. Uh-huh. I just keep it in my head, and then when it's time to let it out, I let it out. So
I know one of the things that I do is I do, and I have a tendency when I'm driving down the road, I seem to get my best thoughts when I'm driving. And I'll pick up my phone and record.
It?
Yeah. Well, you know, and the nice thing is, with your smartphone, you know, you could just turn on the recorder and just talk into it, you know, and have it hooked up that way. Which I know I do, and I'm sure other people do too. So
sure, that's when you CHP pulls you over.
Yeah. One of the things I do. They're really not ideas, but. What I try to do, I've really adopted audiobooks to my schedule. And so when I'm in the car, I'm always listening to an audiobook now. You know, at nights I'm reading, but when I'm in Audible, but when I'm listening to something, I do have a tendency, you know, if I take a break or a rest stop, I do have a tendency to write down a sentence that I hear an author writing. And I'm like, oh, I really like the way that author wrote that. You know, I'd like to use that somehow. You know, obviously, you know, I'm not going to write it down exactly and plagiarize, but I do stuff like that. If I hear a really interesting, lengthy description of somebody's nose, you know, or somebody's face or somebody's, you know, hair, I have a tendency just to write that down. And so, you know, when I go back on the computer that night or that day, or the next morning, I'm going to go, okay, well, I wanted to describe this guy's face. I want to describe this. This author did it really well. How can I, you know, use some of the things that he wrote or she wrote and put it into my own? So I do that, but not necessarily ideas, though. So,
are your books available in audiobook form?
They are, yeah. Both of them are available in audio. They're sold in all the retail outlets. It's been distributed overseas. So audio, Kindle, all that stuff. So, yeah, it's available for in a wide variety of formats. So
there's the question. Do you prefer ebooks or do you prefer regular, I got to sit down and turn to page books?
Well, you know what? Believe it or not, I'm a Kindle guy now, believe it or not. And I'll still purchase books occasionally. But, you know, part of it is just, you know, I mean, you can only have so many books in your house, right?
So, yeah, but, that's true.
You know, I mean, they're well, maybe, I don't know, Bobby. Maybe you've got another house.
Well, Bobby, you sell them, though.
But for me, to be quite frank, you know, and I don't know if it's because I'm a little bit older now, but, you know, for me, it's much easier reading on a Kindle. I mean, especially the Paperwhite. I mean, I don't know if you have the older Kindle, but I have the Paperwhite, and it is just stunning technology. I mean, I'll sit there. It's lightweight. I can make the font bigger. I can make it smaller. But I feel exactly like when I'm looking on a Kindle Paperwhite that I'm reading a book. Yeah, it doesn't have the same feel. It doesn't have the texture. But for me, I actually prefer Kindle now. It's just much easier. I can store a lot more books in it and read when I'm on the go. If I'm traveling, I'm going to a conference, or I'm doing an interview, or I'm doing a book signing or something like that. I mean, it's just so much easier than packing one or two books into the suitcase or something. So I'm a big Kindle fan. How about you all?
Both.
Kindle fans or traditional books?
Both.
Both, yeah.
Both, yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
I still like books.
I do, too. And as a matter of fact, I love curling up in my chair with a cup of coffee, and that's how I read your book.
Mm-hmm. I loved I loved that we had an actual book to read.
I know. It's so so seldom.
Oh, I'm glad. Well, I'll definitely send you the next one so when that comes out. But, yeah, I mean, I love a book, too. I mean, I'm starting to also, like, collect some books, you know, the few that I can get my hands on. And I actually just bought a signed first edition Tom Clancy Hunt for Red October.
That was more than $5.
Yeah, I picked that up. It was expensive. It was
I'm sure.
I picked that up from a rare bookstore. So, don't get me wrong. I still love books, and I'll still buy them. But, you know, I think we're all probably pretty voracious readers. And so I can't buy a book every time. So a lot of times I'll do the Kindle.
Right.
Did you?
What are you reading and listening to? Are you in the same genre that you write? Or are you reading all different kinds of, you know, what's... But what's in your pile?
He's reading Jefferson's Chance.
well, my latest Kindle, Bobby, is Jefferson Greeley, right?
Right.
Well,
the name of the book is Jefferson's Chance. Right.
Book, yep. And reading about Stinky. But no, I mean, I've been, you know, I'll read Steve Barry. I'll read Tom Clancy. I'll reread Tom Clancy. I'll read some Frederick Forsyth. And so what I'm also doing is there's a writer in for, God, I cannot believe I forget his name. Maybe you'll know. He did the Civil War, those three huge volumes in the Civil War.
Shelley Foote.
Oh, my goodness. Shelby Foote. My goodness. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm actually looking at a bookcase. I'm looking right at him here in my house.
Yeah. I saw his books actually in the same bookstore in Savannah when I was doing the book signing the year before last, when my first book came out. And I like Shelby Foote. And so I mean, I've already started to see some of his writing creeping into mine in terms of my descriptions, because that's we talked about earlier. I'm trying to focus more on descriptive, background on some of these. But so I like Shelby Foote, but mostly in my genre, you know. I mean, I'm trying to read the masters, you know, because there's a reason why Tom Clancy was a master in the genre. There's a reason why John le Carré is a master, and so I'm trying to read. Reread some of those and read some ones that I never read growing up to try to adapt some of their styles, because it's amazing to me when I go around and I talk to people, you know, usually people that come to whatever I do, they like the espionage. I mean, they like a lot of the new counterterrorism books. That's really not my style, but it's amazing how many of them still, you know, read Graham Greene or, you know, John le Carré, even Ian Fleming.
Sure.
And it's amazing that Frederick Forsyth, you know, he's still writing.
Well, you know, Ian Fleming still holds up, and his first book was 1953, Casino Royale.
Yeah. I mean, my goodness, he's got like 20, 25 books out at this point.
He died in 64,
you know,
I think.
There's a reason why those guys are masters. So.
Yeah. Hey, look, we're going to have to cut this because we're out of time. Amazingly enough.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a blast. I hope you guys had as much fun as I did.
Well, did. And if you don't mind, let our listeners know where they can get a hold of you and contact you and find your books, and if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Yeah, my website is michaelbradybooks.com. That's michaelbradybooks.com. I'm also on Twitter. My name is at Michael Brady Writer. I'm also on Facebook, Michael Brady Writer. But the best way to contact me is on my website, and that's www.michaelbradybooks.com.
Cool. And the book is, of course, Into the Shadows, Assassination Corps. And you can find it at Amazon. That's where I found it. And you can find it at all the online booksellers. And did I send you a mug the last time you were on, a coffee mug?
I think you did.
Okay.
Yes. I'm hesitating because I was on someone else's show last year, and I know I got one. I think you did.
It's a writer's block. You can't miss it. It says writer's block on it.
Yeah.
He just wants another one, Jim.
I mean, we are writers here, Michael.
I'm going to have to look at my coffee mug collection because I'm here with my girlfriend in Jacksonville.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he needs a set, Jim.
Gotcha. Okay, well, thanks.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I can always use a coffee mug. So if you want to, I will certainly
send you another one.
Sure. I can't definitively, I'd be lying if I said I know I had one, but I think I did get one for you.
Okay, cool. Thanks for spending your evening with us, Michael. I know it's late, and we do appreciate your time and you staying up talking to us. So,
No, thank you so much for having me.
Stay
really
in touch.
It's an honor, and I really do appreciate it. Oh, I hope we get a chance to talk again soon.
You betcha. Stay in touch, my friend.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you all. Take
you
care.
Betcha. Night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye. And it was... Michael Brady. What a guy, huh?
Yeah.
That hour just went. Next week, we have Jack Adler, who is a repeat on the show. And this time, I hope we can get him to talk about, Richard won't be here, so we won't be talking about newspaper business. His new book is called The Sperm Farm. I know you can say that on radio now. Yeah, so it's The Sperm Farm. I had no idea what it's about. You all should have gotten it today. And we'll get into that next week with Mr. Jack Adler, who will be in studio, along with Henry Park will be with us. Yeah, not with us, but on the phone with us.
Good.
And golly, it's just, everything's just...
Moving along, Jimmy C.
It is, Bobby B. And, of course, on the 26th of this month, we have a very special writer's block again. On a Tuesday night, we have Tom Lang from the... LAPD. He was the lead detective on the O.J. Simpson case. Mm-hmm. And also on the Wonderland case, if you recall that, Bob. You were around then.
Oh, right. Yeah.
With John Holmes.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's going to be an interesting... That's just strictly going to be talking about his books.
Laurel Canyon.
That's right. That on Wonderland Drive.
Yeah.
Okay. Bobby Jean, what kind of announcements have you got for us here?
What kind of announcements do I have?
Anything?
I'm unprepared.
Okay, well then, we will have April 9th, we will have your friend, Junie Fisher.
Yes.
And she actually called me the other day and firmed everything up, so she is set for April 9th.
I actually saw her on Tuesday night, and she handed me a copy of the book, and she told me she had spoken with you, and we are all so excited that she's going to be on the show.
Excellent. Yes, she did. She called me on Saturday, I believe, and we actually had quite a long chat, so appreciate
she's
it.
She's really cool.
All righty, for Bobby Jean Bell, for Bob Brill, and for myself, Jim Christina, and the Writer's Block, we have effectively killed another Thursday evening. We thank you all for listening. We will be back next week with Jack Adler. And until then, we're out of here.